Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Now it's time for John Williams.
Yeah,
on
well,
Chicago's.
I already interrupted you on Chicago's whatnot. What was that last part?
Very own 720 WGN, I think.
I sound anxious to talk here, don't I? And I'm not really. It's a regular Saturday, in a way. I'm glad that you are here, and I am here, and we're all together on what is such a better feeling getting up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You go to take your dog out or whatever it is, take the trash out, go to your car if it sleeps outside, and it's remarkable how much 40 degrees, mind you. I mean, with 35 at the lake, okay? I live near the lake. I went outside this morning. It was 35, and that would have made it arguably 55 degrees warmer than it was 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's not surprising that that is really different. But good Lord, did the weather impact people's lives and emotions and feelings and work and everything. I mean, I've walked around this planet for a while, and I do not remember many 3 or 4 day spells where everybody was so in it together and was so suffering. You know, we've had some terrible heat waves, and we've suffered through those, but this one just seemed to be worse, different. I don't know. And you know, it could have been worse. We didn't get a lot of snow with this. Not that you normally think of that when it's 20 below zero, but it was like people were discovering for the first time how to combat this kind of cold.
There's a motto in the minor league baseball industry we approach that goes, embrace the suck. You're going to be staying in some bad hotels. You're going to be sitting at some bad ballparks. There's going to be long, hot days. You just got to endure it and just embrace it. I feel like all of Chicago did that on Wednesday and Thursday. Just embrace the horrid, brutal, frigid lifestyle that this is.
Mm-hmm. Heads down, move forward.
Right.
When you get 20 inches of snow, but it's 15 degrees, 20 degrees, I kind of like that, you know, that sort of camaraderie that comes from all of us suffering through and helping each other get through it together, shoveling walks, pushing cars out, things like that. This felt more punishing than that. I mean, I think we were all getting through it, but there wasn't an esprit de corps here.
Right. Like, you can help someone push their car out of a snowbank, but, like, you can't share your winter jacket, like, you know, while you're wearing it, you know?
Here, yeah. Take my hot cocoa. Have my hand warmers.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the downtown was just abandoned. I don't know what it was like in Wheeling or Naperville or Joliet, but downtown Chicago was not the town it normally is on a Wednesday, Tuesday through Thursday, say.
No, it was a ghost town down here.
So, welcome to 35 degrees along the lake and 30s and 31s across the metro. And by the way, don't celebrate too much. There I was coming down Lakeshore Drive in the powerful Mach 5 this morning and zipping right along. And I thought, you know, it's 31 degrees and it's moist. I haven't heard of a lot of people spinning out, but you know, if we were coming to this weather today from 50 down to 30, you'd say, oh, be careful. Don't celebrate too much when it's on the upswing because there's still ice on the roads and there's still slick spots. So there's a little friendly advice from your neighborhood talk show host. By the way, Joe Brand, you said that the Bears are going to go with mobile-only entry next year to Bears games. That means no paper tickets, I presume. And that means if I print out my ticket, they don't want that? They're not going to scan it?
Yeah, as far as I know, a lot of teams and arenas and fields are starting to do this now. And like we were saying on Lou's show, it's got to be to try and prevent all the false tickets that are being created. And this way, the team kind of just has a little bit more control on exactly what's going on.
Yeah, but what
there.
If I don't have a portable mobile? What if I don't have a mobile
right,
device?
There's the downside. I do want to bring this up. A lot of texters were saying, oh, if I don't have Wi-Fi or if my phone, well, if your phone dies, this solution doesn't really help. But you can always screenshot it. Whenever I get the tickets, I will screenshot it. And then you could, say, text it to your friend. Say you buy two tickets and you're meeting your friend at the game. You have the tickets, you screenshot it, you text it to your friend, and then that way your friend can get in with it. That makes it a little bit more convenient than a tangible paper ticket in that regard.
I will tell you, this conversation is thoroughly intimidating and baffling to plenty of people.
Yes.
The Minnesota Timberwolves, I used to live there and go to a lot of Minnesota Timberwolves games, and they went to something like this. And if you showed up at the event without your device, you could go to a table and they would somehow look you up. You know, they would print a ticket for you if you didn't have your mobile device, and then you could walk through and they would scan that. But they weren't issuing tickets at the point of purchase normally or online. You know, they weren't printable paper tickets. But if you showed up without your device, they did have a way around that. So, yeah, if it, you know, hey, it's 2019. Get with the program, right?
Here's the last paragraph from Colleen Kane of the Chicago Tribune. The Bears also announced they will go to mobile-only ticket entry in 2019. Printed tickets won't be issued to season ticket holders or individual game buyers. Fans must manage their tickets online or on mobile devices where they can also share or resell tickets. The Bears said mobile ticketing is intended to reduce fraud and better evaluate fan experience.
Okay.
And save the trees.
Yeah. I think that last thing, better evaluate the fan experience, is the operative phrase there. So now we're going to have a digital thumbprint of you. We're going to know who you are, where you went, what you bought. I think it's tracking.
If you left early.
Whatever. Yeah, I don't know.
You can be appropriately shamed.
Well, if it were to a Bulls game, I think it's shameful if you showed up. But that's a different subject. Okay, let's pause. It's 10:17. Sam Panionovich did sports on this Saturday morning show before one Joe Brand did. Sam went to Vegas. He works for some fancy sports wagering enterprise. But he's got some of those, what do they call them, Joe? Prop bets? Is that what those are?
You got it, prop bets.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit about how best to watch the Super Bowl. Sam Panionovich joins us now on WGN Radio. He used to do sports here at WGN. He's now the host at VSiN. How are you, my friend?
Old friend, it's good, man. I'm ready for the Super Bowl. We're only going to have about $6 billion around the world wagered on tomorrow's game. Only $6 billion with a B.
Who's going to win the game? I mean, this is, Tom Brady said we're the underdog, but he's just selling that. This is the Patriots game to lose. Is that true?
I would say so, especially off of last year's loss. I mean, they've never lost back-to-back Super Bowls. And when they opened this point spread up 2 weeks ago after Championship Sunday, they had the Rams as a very short favorite. So they said the Rams were 1 point better in Las Vegas. But right away, I'm talking 10-15 minutes, the Patriots became a 2-2.5 point favorite. That's the current line. So the people are betting it as if the Patriots were going to win. I still think the Rams are the better team across the board. I think they have a better defense. They have a more balanced offense, but you still have Belichick and Brady and the aura of the Patriots, the experience, the know-how. You know, they've been here before. They've done it before. But if you had to ask me to pick the winner, I think the Rams eke out a win. I've got it 24-23 Rams, but a tight one for sure.
How about you, Joe?
Yeah, I'd echo off of that. I like how Sam went with such a close game, though, because you give 2 weeks for Brady and Belichick to gear up for a defense of the L.A. Rams featuring Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald. They thrive on that type of competition, so it'll be interesting to see how they're able to go around that. But, yeah, I think the Rams are the better team.
I think I speak for all Americans when I say we want a good game. A lot of points scored. What's the over-under on this game, guys? Is it 56? 56 points?
Yeah, 56.5. I just want a game that isn't affected by the officials, honestly. I don't want to talk about the refs on Monday.
Okay. I don't either. All right, so I would like to see a game that has 56 or more points scored. I'd like it to be close, and I think I speak for all Americans when we say we'd like to see the Patriots lose. But you know, I'm not one of those people that's a Tom Brady or Patriots hater, but I think folks, you know, like to see the big guy go down and the up-and-coming team, you know, slay them. Am I right about that, would you say?
I think there's Patriot fatigue. I think that's for sure.
And that's what it is.
When we look at some of these prop bets, I mean, I talked to some of these sportsbook people. They're tired of setting the same prop bets. You know, how many passes will Tom Brady throw? What color will Bill Belichick's hoodie wear? There's Patriot fatigue, not only from the viewers across the country, but from a lot of these bookmakers out here in Vegas, because it feels like every single year we're talking about the Patriots on the first weekend in February.
How much money do Americans wager on this game?
Legally, $165 billion in Nevada. And remember, King, you've got about eight states now that are taking bets legally. So $165 million in Nevada, $320 million legally across the country. And then if you combine the legal wagers, the illegal wagers, and all the bets across all these different spots around the world, $6 billion. So it's something that everybody comes out of the woodwork to do. But we're talking $320 million legally across the USA and $6 billion around the world.
What's a prop bet? Why do they call it a prop bet?
Prop is short for propositional. And as you remember, the first big prop bet in Super Bowl history was Super Bowl 20, Bears-Patriots. Will Refrigerator Perry score a touchdown? Which was 20-1, and that came in because the fridge got the ball, rumbled into the end zone. That started the prop bet revolution back in 1985-86. That was the first real prop bet, and now you have about 1,000 different ways to bet on the game. Before the game even starts, how long will the national anthem be? The over-under is 1:47 for Gladys Knight. Will she miss a word? You can bet on that. What color will the Gatorade be at the end of the game that is poured on the winning coach? I mean, they've gotten so creative and so exotic with some of these prop wagers. I know you love the halftime show. How many songs will Maroon 5 play? 7.5, over, under. Will Adam Levine wear a hat? Yes or no? All of these things are bettable in some of these shops around the world. So it's super fun, and everybody can get involved.
Which one that you like? What's one that you would put money on?
I put money on the longest touchdown. You can bet in the length of the longest touchdown, and it was 49.5 yards. I went under because I think I get two really good defenses. I get 2 weeks to prepare. Like Joe Brand said, you get extra time to sort of figure out what the other team does well. And I don't think there's going to be a kick or a punt return for a touchdown. So I went under 49.5. On the longest touchdown of the game. What do you think about that?
I think, what do I know? But that sounds right to me. How about you, Joe?
Yeah, Sam, you mentioned the Gatorade color, if Adam Levine's going to wear a hat. Is there any leaked information about that kind of stuff? Cause, I mean, it honestly seems like that's something, you know, the ball boy could throw some red dye in the Gatorade and affect that.
And
I mean,
make money.
Is there any information that's leaked at all for those kinds of things?
Well, I can tell you this. There has been, and this is sort of like the stock market. You can see where these things move and where they were and where they are now. The money has actually showed up on clear. Here's why. So this leaked on social media that the Rams' favorite Gatorade flavor is Ice Punch, which happens to be a clear Gatorade. On the other side of the field, the Patriots have had two Super Bowls where they've dumped water. So there have been a lot of dollars wagered on the clear. So that's all I can tell you at this point. And it's funny because every year somebody's got a guy or a cousin or a nephew that's on the sound crew. Right, yeah, that's listening to the set for the halftime show. I took an inside tip, though, one year, and it was wrong. So I don't go back to that well on the tips.
By the way, Sam Panionovich, the host of VSiN on Sirius XM. Is that how we find you there, Sam Panionovich?
Yes, sir. Channel 204. We're on all day tomorrow. Only all day tomorrow for the Super Bowl.
I got one quick question from a listener. I think we should have asked this earlier. Hey, Mike, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Hi. Yeah, I'm curious about the prop bets and the ones that have a human factor. Like, if you were Gladys Knight, wouldn't you call your friends and say, I got this. Is that the over?
Well, that's kind of what Joe was alluding to a moment ago. And really, it seems to me to be not that well regulated. It seems to be rife for somebody to cheat a little bit there, Sam.
Well, remember, props like that, you can only bet $50 to $100. Not going to change your life. And I don't think Gladys Knight, and I don't think an NFL player making $5 million in a single season is going to take a dive on a prop. That's just me. But you're right. It's possible. I don't think it's that serious.
So how do I do this? If I wanted to place one of those wagers, where do I find them and how do I do it?
Well, this is a offshore market for the most part. You can't, of course, you can't legally bet anywhere in Illinois yet, but from what I can gather, you'll be able to bet by next Bears season. I think Pritzker is going to put this bill through. I think they're going to have it done by probably May or June. And you'll be able to bet on sports legally in Illinois probably by August or September. But as far as betting on this stuff in Illinois this year, Gotta have a guy, King. Gotta find a guy. Go to an alley. Go to an Italian restaurant.
Really? Yeah, go to an Italian restaurant.
For the time being, we're going to tweet out Sam Panianovich's number and head down there.
So this is an academic exercise for us here in Illinois, then, huh?
At this point, yes.
Nice to hear your voice, Sam. We got to go. You keep doing what you're doing and come to our studio. Say hi sometime.
Will do. Take care, guys.
That's Sam Panionovich, SiriusXM, VSiN. He's going to be on all day, Super Bowl Sunday. 5:30 is the opening tip on CBS for what we're supposed to call the big game. The big news coming up next on WGN. 10:39 on WGN. Let's pay it off. So, Joe, just we were talking about it. I want to talk about the Fyre Festival and the two documentaries made about it. But since I sold so well, I think John Weideman's play-by-play, where are we on the game when we do this?
This would give the Hawks a 2-0 lead in the second period.
Okay, hit it.
Hutton out to stop it for Rasmus Dahlin. He's through center ice over the Hawk line, down the left wing. Back pass into the high slot. Skinner tried to feed it back, picked off by Gustafson. Headman pass, Kane on a breakaway through center ice over the Sabre line. He shoots, he scores! Patrick Kane with NHL point number 900. The hometown kid comes back and puts on a show. A breakaway goal makes it 2-0 in favor of the Hawks.
He is honestly one of the best. I don't produce as much as I used to, but when I would produce the Blackhawks games here, we do the out-of-towns, and you can hear it with Chris Bowden's post-game show every game. We do the out-of-towns
every game
that happened.
Play-by-play
and
from other
cities. We listen to every broadcaster, and I might be biased, but I am totally okay with saying John is the best.
It's like his mind is ice skating.
Well, it's like he read ahead.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he knows. And the thing is, say he gets the big goal, but then he's already got sort of encapsulated in his mind the perspective to put it in. The hometown kid comes home and scores. You know, did you hear him say, or did you hear him at one point go, hey, Griffin, who is that one guy?
And ironically, Griffin was there inside the booth with him. But no, the thing is, and I say this a lot, but when you do play-by-play and you do baseball, it's a slow game. You know basically everyone. You can write down where each player is. Basketball, yeah, it's fast-moving, but it's 5-on-5. You got a pretty good idea of who's on the floor. Football, a lot more players, but they have significant designated positions, and the numbers are inclined to where their positions are. Hockey, numbers mean nothing. Players change on the fly. It's faster than any other sport, and they are rotating and changing lines rapidly. So you not only need to know your team through and through, you just need to know how a person skates in order to identify them. And that's what John is so good at, doing that for both the Hawks and the visiting team.
There's no room for a Tony Romo in the NHL because you can't pause, reset, think about what's going to happen and describe it. It's happening right now.
Speaking of prop bets, I think there's a prop bet on Tony Romo, how many times he'll say, here we go tomorrow.
And how many correct predictions he will have.
Ooh, that's a good one.
7.5,
that's
if I'm
a really
mistaken.
Good one.
Yeah.
This week, the Wall Street Journal reported on how accurate Tony Romo really is. They went back and watched every game he did this year, and then tallied every single time he said, I think this is going to happen. He came up with a 69% or 68% accuracy rating. They said some of them were vague, like they'll probably pass here, and maybe it was third down. But then other times he was quite specific. It'll be a run off left tackle. And 68, 69% of the time he was right. What the article didn't say was then how does that compare to other guys that do that, and gals, how does he compare to other analysts? But they talked at length about how interesting it was. And if 68 or 69% is the league average, what was really fun was that in that conference championship game, he had four really critical calls, and he was very specific. Now, the pass to Gronkowski, I think I knew he was going to throw to Gronkowski. He was way over there, and he's 23 feet tall. And they needed to get the ball to him. So that wasn't maybe so shocking. But other times, he really did seem to have a hand on what was going to happen.
Yeah, I think I read something, too, that his prediction percentage is officially higher than his completion percentage
yes,
as a quarterback in the postseason.
That's right. It's true. They mentioned that in the story, too. In the TV movie-watching haze that was this week for me, and I don't know what you did with maybe all of those hours that we were indoors, but I watched First Man, I watched The Wife, two terrific movies. I watched 7 episodes of True Detective, which isn't easy to do since only 5 have been released of season 3, but I watched episodes 1 and 2 twice. I watched lots of basketball. Hello, James Harden. Glad I'm not your teammate. I watched Molly's Game. Hello, Jessica Chastain. And in the frozen fog of this week, I also watched the 2 Fyre Festival documentaries. Wow.
Fyre Festival was supposed to be the new Coachella, the new Burning Man. It was going to be an experience bordering on impossible.
What's the worst thing that could possibly happen?
This is our world.
Oh, God.
Oh. Nightmare in Paradise.
There was no music.
They were put into disaster relief tents.
People started to have breakdowns. People started to have panic attacks.
It's a great time to be a con man in America.
So here's what that's all about. In the spring of 2017, the Fyre, spelled F-Y-R-E, festival was to take place. It was going to be a luxury, immersive, musical festival on the Bahamian island of Great Exuma. Think Lollapalooza, but smaller, with supermodels and gourmet food and musical artists, and the Bahamas with luxury accommodations. It was organized by an entrepreneur named Billy McFarland and rapper Ja Rule. Tickets were in the $1,500 to $15,000 range per person. They even sold the package for 10 that cost $250,000. You got a cool boat with that one. The event was a bust. Though it sold thousands of tickets, they said 95% of the 5,000 tickets available sold in 24 hours. And people showed up. Planes full of people arrived in the Bahamas. The musical acts by then had long bailed. And the event producers were unprepared. FEMA tents with rain-soaked mattresses were lined up on the lots of an unfinished housing complex. A photo of a cheese sandwich in a styrofoam container, hardly the stuff of the promised celebrity chefs, went viral. And everybody laughed at those dumb, spoiled white kids who got took. So Vice and Netflix each produced documentaries about what happened. And both movies focus on this organizer named Billy McFarland.
I'm sorry. Vice produced the documentary with Netflix.
Got it. Oh, and then Hulu.
Hulu had the competing documentary.
McFarland is a serial compulsive liar. One of the docs better illustrates that, but neither of them shy from that fact. He's a con man, this McFarland fella, and he conned everyone around him. He wasn't without good ideas. In fact, the festival was actually created to promote his Fyre app. The Fyre app was a good idea. You've heard about how sometimes rich people or businesses book celebrities for their private events. You know, for enough money, Mariah Carey will sing at your bar mitzvah. This is going to streamline that. If you swipe on Mariah and she swipes you back, then you're hooked up and it's a going concern. Fyre Festival was not. They were so in over their heads. There are now 8 lawsuits and class action suits seeking more than $100 million in damages. And this McFarland guy is in jail. He pleaded guilty to 2 counts of fraud and was sentenced to 6 years in prison. And $26 million in fines, which he does not have. Lots of questions about this remain unanswered. But to me, Griffin, you watched it. I watched it. I don't think you guys watched the movies yet, but I really recommend it. They're not real long, and they're fascinating. Even though you know the outcome of it, you really haven't seen the specifics on this. One of the takeaways for me is something that sort of came up later in the movie, and that is that welcome to 2019 again. It's very easy to be conned. The internet can deceive you. This was a marketing campaign with no product behind it, and people got duped. I don't know that those people were all stupid. I don't know what to make of the people that put their money down. What do you make of the people that put their money down?
Well, I don't know. That's the reason this blew up in the way it did before these movies even came out. It blew up on social media because it was fun to engage in some schadenfreude with the people that attended. Easy to do that because no one got hurt.
Right.
Although someone definitely could have, and that would have soured the whole
security.
It's sort of incredible that no one got hurt, but luckily no one did. And then, so you see this disaster happening at this stupid festival that's not what it was cracked up to be. You have a brief moment where you're like, is anyone hurt? No? Okay, now I can laugh at everyone there.
I can enjoy this, yeah.
And,
well, let me ask you this. Was it a con all along, or do you think that he was sincere but inept?
I don't know what's going on in his brain, and I don't really think that's a question that can be answered and therefore maybe not worth asking. Like, I don't know. But it doesn't matter.
Well, they were planning an event. The movie is about them planning this event. They just didn't know what the hell they were doing.
If the question is, did he want it to go off without a hitch? Yeah, I think absolutely he wanted it to be a great festival. But he had no idea what he was doing, and he lied every step along the way and stole money from people in order to make it what he thought it was going to be. So
he misrepresented what his net worth was. He misrepresented the accommodations that they had already secured.
Forms. Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. So that, and again, I think that was not how he intended to operate, but he found himself going down that well because he had to, he would fly off back to New York from the Bahamas, talk to some people, whoever they were. They were never clear about this. It was frustrating in the docs. But suddenly he'd come back with $3 million more in the bank account, real dollars that somebody really gave him. And then they'd start writing checks and zooming around on their jet skis and hiring acts. They ordered $2 million worth of booze, to which one of the laborers there, one of the guys that was helping them, said, "This is the Bahamas. You can get a drink for 49 cents. He said, who needs $2 million worth of booze for a couple of weekends? Anyway, they spent their money stupidly.
Yeah.
How responsible should we hold the influencers? One of the reasons it blew up was because they were very clever. They shot a cinematic series of promotional viral videos showing supermodels at the beach. I mean,
very,
you know,
famous Instagram models.
Hailey Baldwin, Bella Hadid. Emily Ratajkowski, Alessandra Ambrosio. I don't know these people.
Well,
but
Kendall Jenner being the top of the heap. Do those names mean anything to you? They mean barely anything to me. And yet they have combined, I don't know, probably if you combined them, maybe like close to a billion Instagram followers, like in the hundreds of millions for sure.
So those people that are following them go, wow, these ladies are going to be at that event. Which is weird because, no, they've already been at the event. They shot a video. Do you think they're going to come back? I mean, maybe they will. It was vague, but it just looks so luxe. It looks so cool.
Yeah. And I think people were convinced by the high prices they were paying of the quality, which is a weird sort of loop of confirmation.
Where right. I hate to give you $2,500, but if I do, I'll bet it really is going to be good.
Yeah, it must be great. I'm paying $10,000 for this whole experience. And then you're telling me to add more money in order to do add-on activities. So, okay, those must be awesome, too. Here's $20,000.
Well, here's what happens. So, right, some people would be out $5,000, $10,000, whatever, to go. And then they get an email from the organizers, and they'd say, hey, listen, we suggest that you add to your account, and we'll give you a chip that you can spend like cash. We suggest that you add to your account another several hundred dollars so that you can buy extra things. And some of them were saying, well, then what did I just spend $10,000 for? But anyway, they were hitting them up for extra money to put in the accounts. The reason they did that wasn't because they had extra value to provide. It was that they were running out of money on the production.
Yeah, they needed cash to make the next step of things happen. Your question was, how responsible do you hold the influencers? It's pretty tough. I hold them to some responsibility, but a low level in terms of like the levels of responsibility that went into this catastrophe. I'd put them near the bottom because they didn't know. And
I guess
it's their job to be in videos and look good in them. Like, and they did their job.
How about Kendall Jenner? So
and they were paid handsomely for it.
Yeah. What did Kendall Jenner get? It was one post.
For one Instagram post, she got $250,000.
Isn't that, I mean, if you only learned that, because you look at the Kardashians and you go, how do those people live, right? What is their value to society? But she has such, and this doesn't answer that question, but it tells you why they did it. She has such a following that if she says, hey, I'm wearing this product or drinking this soda, people will notice it and maybe they'll sample that. If she says, I'm at this event, your event has a chance of succeeding. They gave her $250,000 to just use their icon and do one Instagram post. One. It's amazing to me. I mean, that's a lot of money. I know, we got to pause. If you saw the docs, what was your takeaway? I'm kind of curious. The Fyre Festival documentaries, there are two of them. Eric Zorn recommended this on the Mincing Rascals podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, yeah, I got to watch that. I'm so glad I did. 10:55 on WGN. We're talking about the two documentaries about the Fyre Festival. Took place in 2017 or didn't take place in 2017, Mike, you wanted to say something about it, or rather Tom. Hi, Tom. You're on WGN.
Thanks for taking my call. Just listening to the scenario, it looks like a combination of the Sopranos and what goes on in some of the Trump organizations.
I saw on my screen, I thought you said Theranos.
No, Sopranos.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, there's a level of corruption to all of this. Thanks for the call. And it is, if you follow the Elizabeth Holmes story, Theranos, it's another example of people who are marketing something that they don't have. In the case of Theranos and that Elizabeth Holmes woman, it was billions of dollars in valuation and hundreds of millions of dollars invested. In this case, it was a music fest, so it seemed a little harmless. But Griffin, real quick, thanks for the call. Why are you laughing at that?
It was not harmless.
Maybe the
values were not the same, but
I guess that's what I'm saying.
A lot of people are out a lot of money.
Well, and
that was stolen from them.
The people that were really victimized, if you will, were the workers. So they're in the Bahamas. They want more money to come. They want more investment. And the idea that a 5-year festival would come 2 weekends a year and invest millions of dollars was really intriguing to them. And those people worked to build set up tents and build a stage and do all of the labor to get the
feed
thing
people,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, granted, it wasn't their fault. Nowhere near ready for the crowds that arrived, but a lot of people put in a lot of manual labor.
That they've still not been paid for. And I think they get the short shift a little bit in the documentaries, or maybe a lot of it in the documentaries. You don't hear enough from them, the people on the ground, the locals.
I want to read this. So there was that one woman who was in charge of the labor force, and she paid the locals out of her own life savings. She lost her $50,000. Since then, 8,300 people have so far donated to a GoFundMe page for her. The goal for that GoFundMe page was $123,000, and in 19 days, as of today, it's raised $214,000. So she's made whole, and she can pay off some people. Maybe that'll help some of those folks.
I don't want to let this conversation end without talking about the documentaries themselves. I know we're running out of time.
Go ahead.
They both suffer. They were both made with serious ethical quandaries, I think, at the heart of their productions. The Hulu production paid Billy McFarland, the guy behind all of this, for his interview. So they paid him money to be in their movie, which is a problem.
Although he doesn't look good in the movie. He's busted as a liar.
Sure, but they still gave him money.
Yeah.
Maybe right. Don't give him money.
He's capitalizing once again on his lies.
Could we not? But I actually have a bigger problem with the Netflix movie, which was co-produced by Jerry Media. They run a viral account called the F word, Jerry, I can't say, but a very popular meme account where they often steal content from people and monetize it, which is a problem itself. So they were tapped because they're sketchy dudes to do the marketing for Fyre Festival. So that's a perfect marriage. But then they also co-produced the Netflix movie. So they're just failing up. And now they're working with Netflix and they're able to shape the story about themselves, which seems totally wrong. And
their
really,
version of that story makes them look like they were almost duped. They were doing their best to save it.
What could we have done when really they were totally complicit? And that drove me insane. So they were entertaining for sure, but a lot of problems with those documentaries too.
Billy McFarland's in jail. $26 million fine. He's going to serve 6 years, maybe less with good behavior. Although I don't know how good he can behave. Thank you, Don. By the way, just to continue to follow up on this Governor Ralph Northam story, the governor of Virginia, the Democrat, who as a med school student in the age of 25 had in his yearbook a picture, and the picture shows a man in blackface and another guy in a KKK hood and hat, or hood and gown.
Not a great look.
He originally said that he regrets being in that picture, never saying which one he was, and CNN and others are reporting now that he said he's not in that photograph, and it sounds now like he's not going to resign. He's going to talk at 1:30 our time this afternoon, so we'll see how that plays out. A lot of people have been saying he should resign. Should he resign if he's not in the picture but still put it on his yearbook page? Who knows the answers to these questions? I think it's pretty easy. At least I have until about 10 minutes ago. I thought, dude, you got to go. I'm sorry. Bye-bye. I know you've changed, and I know you were duly elected. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Now he says that wasn't him, but you still put it's still your yearbook page, if you had any control over that, then I still think that's a pretty grave sin. And what's this waffling back and forth? Why do you one day say, yeah, I'm in there, and don't say which, and now you say you're not, he'll speak at 1:30. Stay tuned to WGN Radio for more about that. The Mincing Rascals is a weekly podcast we record here at the studios at WGN Radio. This week we recorded it on Friday because of the weather. It actually delayed our recording of it. It's the award-winning Judge Best in Chicago podcast, The Mincing Rascals. This week it features Justin Kaufman, Eric Zorn, the columnist from the Tribune, Justin from our morning show, and Steve Bertrand, who does our noontime business show, as well as the news on my show. We started out talking about a number of things in Chicago, and then eventually we segued to Howard Schultz of Starbucks running for president of the United States, which made Eric Zorn kind of crazy.
He brought nothing to the table. His announcement was like, I'm going to bring people together, make them. It was as shallow an ill-conceived rollout as I've ever seen.
Yeah, but that's not why he got the crap kicked out of him, right? It's the liberals are concerned that he's going to run as an independent and siphon Democratic votes away and help Donald Trump win.
That's why everyone was why everyone paid attention.
And he's got Steve Schmidt, I think, working for him, the guy who ran the McCain campaign. Yeah,
but I think Colbert was right when he said, okay, so they asked him, what is your plan for taxes?
Now, you may be wondering what a centrist independent believes, and you're going to keep wondering. Because when Schultz was asked what he thought the corporate tax rate should be, he said, I don't want to talk in the hypothetical about what I would do if I was president. That's literally the only thing you're supposed to be doing while running for president. What? Instead of yes, we can, it's what will we?
And you need a slogan, too. Not your Frappuccino is ready.
I know what you're going to say. Should I leave room for cream?
It's America's wake-up call. Come on, right there.
There you
As
go.
If the weather and the political corruption in Chicago were not enough to give us a black eye this week. Empire actor Jussie Smollett was... let me see if I have the facts on this right, because some of it seems to be in play. He was mugged in Streeterville. He charges that some liquid, maybe bleach, was poured on him and that a noose was hung around his neck.
A rope,
He's the victim of a hate crime. He's black. He's gay. He's out. He says that the assailants said this is MAGA country.
Okay. The Smollett team went to clarify some of the things that have just gone spread like wildfire on the internet with TMZ that essentially said they weren't. He never said they were wearing MAGA hats. That was made up. And the other one was that he kept the rope around his neck until he got to the hospital when he was going to get checked out. And that is not accurate as well. He kept the rope on until the police arrived so he could show them the evidence and not tamper with the evidence. Yeah. And there was a third indicator as well, and I can't remember what it was, the Chicago police came out today. Hedy Johnson's on a tour about it, which is
strange. He's on a tour about January crime numbers.
Yeah, and everyone wants to talk to him about this. Right. But essentially that it came out that he was not cooperating with the police, that they wanted to see his phone and he wouldn't show, or the records, he wouldn't show it. And that's all untrue as well.
He's been very cooperative with us, and I don't see any reason why he wouldn't continue to be cooperative.
He said he was willing to turn over the police the phone records.
Well, we're working with him in that regard. I mean, you know, think about it. How uncomfortable would it be for you to be without your cell phone for a few hours? You know, so we're working with them on that. And like I said, he's been cooperative.
He said that they're cooperating. They said he is cooperating.
Johnson
fully
says that,
and he just said, "Let me get him to you." But they made it seem like he was trying to hide something. He's not trying to hide something.
Anthony Guglielmi was quoted in the Tribune today. Police spokesman saying that he was not sharing his phone records.
Yeah, but that's where this is coming from Smollett's camp saying, no, that's not true.
Now, the unsaid thing in at least the Tribune story was that this might be a hoax. I mean, no one ever says it, but you read between the lines and it's like, well, we looked at all the video, we didn't see anything, and then we saw two guys, but they were walking south and he was walking north or something like that.
Yeah, it was very unusual to me that the police that night said that we've got him on video, but we don't have anyone else. Why would investigators ever say that we don't have, you know, to tell the bad guys, we don't have you on video yet? And when I heard that, I'm thinking, the police think this story's hinky. Yeah. Just the way they spoke said so much so quickly.
Yeah. The hardest part about this story is that you will have conjecture and conspiracy, and you will have people who thinks it's a hoax because it's unsaid, and everyone wants to talk about the water cooler, and how that bleeds over into the news. Meaning, you know, this is how news works. If somebody says that they were attacked and they show evidence of an attack, he was admitted to the hospital, it's his record, and then the police investigation goes to follow that up. That's the facts.
And that doesn't make the news reporter wrong.
No,
he was simply reporting what somebody else said.
And to me, this is such a hard story because I, too, as you know, your radar kind of goes off. There's some questions that still haven't been answered, and you're just kind of head scratching. But at the same time, if true, it is a hate crime. And the idea that Smollett is saying he was assaulted and people did this and they put a rope around his neck and they threw out expletives and slurs and said this is MAGA country and poured chemicals on him, that should not happen to any human being in any circumstance.
Absolutely.
And I
not.
Feel weird and kind of gross that anyone's even questioning if it happened, if that makes sense.
It's a dangerous topic because if you're wrong, it really looks bad. This is an intersection of so many volatile topics in this country right now, right? Race, hate crimes, gay, MAGA. I mean, and when they all intersect, it almost challenges credulity. You think, really? All of that came together in this instance?
I don't want to make light of it, but my biggest concern with this story is these guys are in Streeterville. On Illinois Street, in the shadow of the skyscrapers at 2 o'clock in the morning, saying this is MAGA country. No, it's not. Buddy. If this happened somewhere else, I'd say it's MAGA. Isn't it MAGA country in Streeterville, Long Lake?
It reminds me a little bit, I hate to say this, from Jeffrey McDonald, the doctor in the Fatal Vision case, who said that the hippies came in and killed his wife and were saying acid is groovy and killed the pigs. I mean, it's like something like acid is groovy, kill the pigs. It just doesn't sound like something that would actually happen. Now, it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. And again, you do feel a little bit like, well, gee, this guy, if this really happened, it is a horrible thing, and you have to give them the presumption that it did. But the fact that they got their video cameras all over the place.
That's the one thing that's weird about it. There are video cams where this happened. That's across the street from that old Fox and Nobel where the Target's at now.
Mm-hmm.
That's where North Pier is at. There are cameras. I mean, not to mention probably every residence there has a camera that's out, a doorbell camera going out their window. I would just assume. That is not, even at 2 o'clock in the morning,
I lived there for a few months, and at 2 a.m, there's still foot traffic. There's still cab traffic. There's still
a lot of traffic.
If you were walking down the street with a rope around your neck, somebody would have seen that.
Right.
Somehow
and so that's
would have
been captured. That's the only head scratcher to me is why they can't find surveillance of it happening with all of those businesses with cameras.
Okay, but so then you've sort of come, you've deviated from where you started, where, you know, the facts on the ground are that this happened and police are investigating as it happened, and yet here we're pointing out
these things. You're right. And that's the danger of it. I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody else there are facts of the story, and it's a horrific hate crime. And this is ridiculous and shouldn't happen in our society. And then yet there are these questions that are lingering like a head scratch where you're like, God, I wish I just could see the video.
Did it strike any of you about the police releasing information? Because that really just jumped out on me. And I don't think I'm wrong on that it seemed odd that they said so quickly that we've got.
It's like Eric said in the Tribune.
Unless
there's
they were
a
lying.
Vibe. There's a vibe there where they're going as far to the edge to say. So this could be a hoax without saying it. They dot, dot, dot everything.
The stories feel the same way. It feels like nobody really wants to say. There was some mention of like some commentary on social media, but people are holding back from having the discussion that we're having right here because it's one of those things, and I think maybe in the wake of the Covington High School thing where everyone like too quickly jumped to conclusions about exactly what happened. Everyone's like, okay, well, wait a minute. Let's not just assume that the first thing we hear is the right thing. Let's be skeptical.
Good point, Eric Zorn. Good point, Justin Kaufman. Steve Bertrand, too. That's The Mincing Rascals, and you can hear it in its entirety at WGNRadio.com. It's a free app, of course, or podcast, wherever you subscribe to find our podcast. Listen for The Mincing Rascals. The guys also got at something the president tweeted this week. His tweets will make you crazy. I'll prove that in a minute. The Mincing Rascals was judged this year to be the best podcast in the city of Chicago. One more cut. I'd like you to listen to the whole thing, but here's just a clip of the gang. It's again, Justin Kaufman, Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand, and me. And in this clip, Justin Kaufman is talking a little bit about the president's Twitter account.
I love that the Mincing Rascals is a weekly podcast, and you could go back. I was just thinking a couple days ago with Trump because everything is happens in the 24-hour cycle. Remember he had to take a shot at global warming, which was just on Tuesday. As the temperatures dropped, he went out of his way on Twitter, misspelling global warming, to discredit or just to disprove global warming because it's cold in the Midwest.
The tweets that are coming out, they are the tweets of a madman. I mean, this is the president. It is so absurd
that the president of the United States is sitting in his castle and tweeting things like this. And I think sometimes we forget just how absurd it is.
I think that there must be awesome pressure or a sense of responsibility, I hope, at Fox and Friends. Because they aren't the tweets of a madman. Maybe they are. But they're also the tweets of a morning television show that the madman watches. When they did a segment that they had a North Dakota, I think it was, representative on, talking about that we should teach, give public schools the opportunity to teach Bible lessons. And maybe that plays in North Dakota. Maybe that plays in some circles.
It didn't play in North Dakota. It failed in North Dakota. But
so this guy's on TV, and then the president immediately tweets out, hey, I just heard about this. I think it's a good idea. That's the cycle, right? And then we consume that as news for better or worse.
Yeah, so you watch the weather report. He's got something to say about it.
Totally. And so when then he says something snarky, when he baits people like me with global warming, I was very proud that this week, given all the opportunity I had talking about the weather, I didn't go there. Because that's one of those things that don't matter.
I don't think he's baiting people. I think he thinks that his followers are so dense that they'll believe anything he tweets. And he thinks this supports them.
I think he gets way too much credit for being cagey.
You just gave him cagey credit.
Let me finish that sentence. But I think in this case, he and Ann Coulter know, and I love watching Ann Coulter go from supporter to troller now, but they know that that'll just light people like me up. Now, he doesn't do this on purpose, but when he was calling out the intelligence people for not being intelligent enough, he misspelled there. He went with T-H-E-R-E instead of T-H-E-I-R. He used the wrong version of it. Which makes me, I go these places, it's a waste of time, but I think, okay, is he using voice-to-text? Because voice-to-text will get there wrong. But if you're typing it with your thumbs, then you don't know that it's wrong. You typed out T-H-E-R.
Well, no, there's autocorrect.
I think global whaming says that he's not using voice-to-text. But I sometimes wonder if he puts those things in on purpose because he knows that
people like Justin Kaufman
are gonna get in a snit about it, and then their snit is going to make his followers think they're just attacking
that it. That was my nickname in high school, too.
That's just crazy. This is a guy who wants to be, you know, he's very intelligent. And he went to some of the best schools. He reads a lot of books, and he knows words. He's not going to misspell something on purpose.
Come on, Steve. What are you saying?
He's not cagey. No. He's not cagey. He's not. We keep running these circles around like, oh, maybe he's outthinking people. He's not outthinking anyone.
So do you think he doesn't know how to spell there?
I think that's an autofill. I misspell there on text. I think that happens. That's the thing a normal president wouldn't do because there'd be 18 proofreaders.
I mean, it is really amazing how fast. I mean, when these things happen, I go, I can't wait to talk about that on The Rascals. And by the time we get in the studio, it's like, oh, man, that seems like history.
Well, let's do a quick fact check. What do we all know about Roger Stone? Right? And then the guys went on to talk a little bit about that story as well. So it was a lot of Chicago this week. It was some state stuff too. And then we went to, as we say sometimes, Trump land, the Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast we record every week at WGN. It's 11:28. We'll go into the WGN radio newsroom. Don Kleppen will update you next. Anger wants a voice. Voices won't sing. Hang it down. It's 11:38. This is WGN. I'm John Williams. Saturdays at this time, producer Griffin says, all right, here's a song you guys ought to know about. What are we listening to here, Griff?
That's Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, I eventually came around to recognizing that. At first I thought, who is this? Felt a little like maybe something Paul Simon would have done a few years ago, and now that's Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, I could see that. I thought about the Grateful Dead and Fish, especially later in that song. There's some guitar work that is reminiscent, but the jangly piano, it's like maybe a little George Michael, maybe a little Grateful Dead kind of energy. It's a new thing for them. But it's been 6 years, so we didn't know what to expect.
Years since their last album?
That's right.
Yeah, is this part of a new album release, or is this just a single?
Well, this is the first single, one of two songs they put out that are coming. Their upcoming album is called Father of the Bride, and that's coming, I think, in April or sometime this spring, sometime later in the year. They're going to do release two songs a month until for like 3 months, and then they're going to put out the album, which is supposed to be like 18 songs.
Wow.
Long album.
Interesting way to put it out there.
Yeah.
What did you make of the song? I'll go first. 1 to 100, we rate things in the Vibe Score segment. That's where we are now. 1 to 100, 100 you love it, 0 you sure didn't. I love their first album. I love the songs.
I remember, yeah.
The sound, the feel.
Yeah.
I wasn't alone, although some of us loved it and some people hated it.
Yeah.
87. 87. I liked it pretty well. Pretty well.
Yeah.
Pretty well.
I'm a 90, but that means more of coming. Well, we always have to do this, but I really like the song. I think it's great.
How about you, Joe Brand?
I'm excited.
Yeah, I give it an 88. I'm a big fan of Vampire Week, and I really resonate them with like the end of my high school years. Sure. I remember that's when they got big, and I was going to say when it was playing, I don't remember the last time they came out with a song. I didn't realize it was 6 years, though, so no, yep. I enjoy it.
Yeah. All right, Donnie boy.
I'll give it an 82. I like them just fine. That song was sort of okay, but I'm definitely keeping an open ear for the new album. I like them.
Okay, then I'm going to adjust mine to an 89. I'm going to from 87 to 89, everybody. Write that down.
Okay, 89. Great. That's fantastic. They lost a member, Rostam Batmanglij, who's kind of the main producer and songwriter with Ezra Koenig, the frontman. So he left the band after the release of Modern Vampires of the City. That was 2013. So this is their first release of music without him, and I was very curious how the band would sound without him. But they sound good.
It sounds great. Different, though.
Different, yeah. I'm excited to see what else they've got coming.
All right, I'll throw one out for you guys. Maybe, Joe, this was the one you were going to toss out there, but I'm going to ask you guys to vibe for me on Tom Brady, 1 to 100. Tom Brady. Joe Brand, go.
Just Tom Brady? Oh, boy, that's so...
It's a package.
It's so vague.
No, it's not. It's a guy. He's a human being. He wears a helmet.
How much do you like him, or how great a quarterback is he, or both?
What's your vibe? When I say Tom Brady, you say...
I mean... The guy is one of the most, if not the most, successful people that stepped on a football field of all time.
I think he's successful. Keep going. I'm not sure he's the most talented.
Right. Well, that's where I will not say he's the most talented. There's plenty of other quarterbacks now and in the past that have been. But, I mean, you just can't deny what he has done in the biggest moments. And he does have the aid of a fantastic and brilliant head coach and Bill Belichick as well. But, I mean, his overall package, fine. I'll give him an 88.
I'm a little exhausted with him. I'm not a hater, but I'm not a lover. I think he's like a cast member of Friends. Lucky him, he got that job. Because I think other people could have been his...
Wow, that's really spot on.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole... He's not
you
dreamy.
Think he could have switched places with David Schwimmer and the world would... like it would.
He does seem like a Ross, too. Specifically
yeah.
Ross.
No, he totally does. Because he's not your most favorable character. But, yeah, he can tolerate. Yeah, from time to time, he'll put you in a good mood.
You guys right. completely missed the point I was trying to make. Thank you for that. You know, I'm not in love with his looks like some of the ladies are. And this is the whole thing.
He's gotten better with age, though. That's what I like about him,
can
too.
We just do this objectively on his looks, 1 to 100.
Objectively on the looks,
sticking with 88.
All right, here's 4.
It's hard not to do a 90. I don't know.
I don't know. What do you want? 90, sure, but I mean, it's not all of that.
Well, you just said you didn't think he looked good.
Okay, here's what we're talking about. Here's my vibe on Tom Brady. 79.
I'm going 20. It's enough already.
Yeah.
It's enough already.
I'll go 45. I'm done with him. And I think he, you know, something about like, just something about that documentary that came out with him and he like kisses kids on the mouth or something.
Make sure you put in his kids, not just he kisses kids.
Not kids.
On the mouth.
No, his specifically. That I know of. They did not showcase any other behavior in the documentary.
But he's pretty well insulated himself or the world from his loopiness. He's kind of a goofy dude.
He is, but he's not one of those like crazy funny characters that also play sports that you like fall in love like I feel like
he's not like a Joey, for instance,
right? Yeah. No chance.
He's so not
all
a Joey.
Right, thank you for that.
That was good. Come on.
Okay, so we're all kind of done with the quarterback for the New England Patriots. Don, do you have anything for us to vibe on this week?
Sure. I read a book earlier last year in the summer called Who Fears Death? It's by a Nigerian-American writer of fantasy, Nnedi Okorafor, N-N-E-D-I. Okorafor, O-K-O-R-A-F-O-R. And it was just, you know, it was just a one-book thing. Pretty sure HBO already has the rights to make it into a miniseries, but it was one of the most, you know, if you like... you know, magic, if you like, you know, the, like, sort of the violence of Game of Thrones, like, I really felt like this kind of took it up a notch. It has to do with some very adult themes and some very tough-to-stomach areas, like, you know, abuse and, like, genetic mutilation and stuff like that to start with, but it's also doesn't... you wouldn't think that that's about female empowerment, but as the story goes on, and certainly at the end of it, the main character, who's a young woman moving through Africa, she sort of discovers, like, her power and her ability, and she just goes to town on everybody, and it's pretty rewarding after going through that book. So, yeah, Who Fears Death? I would recommend it if you like sci-fi and fantasy.
Okay. That's your recommendation. I'm not going to vibe on that because I haven't read the book, but you've...
Oh, fair.
And you read... That's kind of your wheelhouse, isn't it?
You
read that stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I like... Those are my books that I will happily just escape into at any point.
Joe, you got one for us by any chance?
Watched a really good documentary, I believe on Amazon. I had to rent it, but it's very cheap, $3-4 maybe. It's called Three Identical Strangers, and I don't want to give away too much about it, but I do want to entice you or anyone listening, but it's also history, so it's not like I can totally give it away. Anyway, this guy goes to community college. He walks in, first day on campus, everyone's calling him Eddie. Hey, Eddie, how was your summer? Great to see you again. The guy's like, what's going on? My name's Bob. So he goes to his dorm. The advisor comes in. His jaw drops. He goes, were you adopted? And Bob goes, yeah, how do you know that? He goes, was your birthday, whatever, July 6, 1961? He goes, yeah, how do you know this? Come with me. They go to a payphone. They go to Eddie's house. They were both adopted. They were twins, and they were separated at birth. It gets all around New York. It's in papers. It's on the news. Turns out there's a triplet, and it kind of takes off from there. It's a very cool... It gets a little dark. It gets very interesting, though. But boy, it's a very, very entertaining documentary. You go highs, lows. And again, I believe it's on Amazon, $3-4 to rent. Very interesting. Totally recommend it.
That was not nominated, I don't think, for Best Documentary Feature at the Oscars. Let me look it up. The Oscars had a strange...
I want to say it's fairly new, though.
Yeah, I saw CNN advertising that just last week, I think.
CNN is all over this, Doc. Whoever's promoting it is buying time on CNN, or CNN is endorsing it or something, but I don't watch CNN for half an hour that I don't see a trailer for this thing.
Yeah, that's what I remember, too. But it does seem interesting.
That was great. I loved it.
They all look like Greg on the Brady Bunch.
You know who they look like is John Taffer from Bar Rescue.
Oh.
I couldn't get that out of my head. I was waiting for him to be the fourth guy.
Oh, my God.
And there's three of them.
And they all want to start a bar together.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They start a restaurant.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Okay. No, it's not nominated for Best Documentary, which was surprising and not the only surprising omission in that category, because the Mr. Rogers movie got snubbed from the Oscars this year.
Some people thought that. That could have been documentary or Best Picture, right?
Well, technically, they could all be Best Picture, but they never do that for some reason.
Yeah.
Griff, did you see it?
I have not seen Three Identical Strangers yet. No, I'm looking forward to it.
If you do... Okay, so when you do watch it, I pulled out something I thought I recognized. When they interview the brothers are looking directly at the camera. When they interview everyone else, they do the rule of two-thirds, what is it, where it's to the side. I always thought... I kind of thought that that's a way to really get the emotional value out of the brothers with... Because that's the other thing, too.
Yeah,
they are so emotional. They're happy. I mean, they're laughing like it was that day that... You know, they rejoin with everyone. I cannot applaud it more.
Huh.
Can I get your guys' opinion on one other thing here?
Sure.
Ariana Grande's tattoo story. Did you guys follow that or hear that this week?
I loved it.
Did not, actually.
I listened to your hit on it the other day.
Well, so I'm just wondering how much sympathy you have for people who get tattoos that say something that they didn't intend.
Zero.
In her case, she has a song called Seven Rings. She went to her Japanese translator. Lucky you if you've got a Japanese translator, right? And so they translated the tattoo, and when they posted it on the internet, people said, that doesn't say seven rings, it says barbecue finger.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I thought it was a barbecue grill.
Barbecue grill. So then they went to fix it. They said, okay, well, we'll just put another little symbol there, and it'll translate into, from barbecue grill, we can make it say seven-finger circle, which would be seven rings. We can fix it. So she got another tattoo added on, and then it became Japanese barbecue finger or fiery finger. So she's walking around now with a tattoo that says fiery barbecue finger.
I think you change your life in order to fit the tattoo.
So that's her new stage name now.
No, she just gets really into grilling. She just becomes a pit master.
Yeah, cookbooks, cool.
Barbecue sauce, Ariana's hot sauce, stuff
she's
like that.
She's extremely talented. I don't see why she couldn't add that to the repertoire. But
lean into it, yeah.
I don't know. I also think that going back to fix it was her mistake, because I think you could just own it and be like, oh, it was a mistake, but I know what I meant. Maybe that's not great either. It's all pretty bad.
I mean, tattoos are an intensely personal thing, right? Like, it's whatever anybody gets tattooed, it's about that meaning something to them.
That's
so
true, but you also don't want to take another language and say, hey, it means whatever I want it to mean.
That's definitely true.
Well, wasn't there some photo that came upon the internet where it was an Asian person with the word majestic tattooed on their arm or something, and said, everything's finally come full circle. Somebody with an English word that means absolutely nothing tattooed onto the body.
It's like the tables have turned.
Right.
Yeah. I like that.
People have strength, you know, in Japanese written.
Well, majestic's a nice thing to have tattooed on you, isn't it?
Yeah, but the word.
You want to get matching majestic tattoos after this?
Well.
We're both majestic.
That's better than barbecue grill or whatever, seven finger or whatever the thing was. I think maybe what she should do, I don't know why more people don't do this, is you've got a friend, I mean, like the tattoo artist, how much confidence do you have in their Japanese? Can't you run that? There's a university wherever Ariana Grande lives, or a Japanese town. Get somebody who really knows their Japanese. Make sure that you've got it right.
That's what I mean. If you're going to fully commit to something as permanent as a tattoo, how especially her, how does she not? Hold on.
And people get tattoo mistakes all the time.
But that's people. This is not Ariana Grande.
I know.
She's a god.
Well, it's sort of like the president tweeting things out wrong. We all tweet things out wrong, but you're on a higher stage. So you really do want to make sure you get it right if you're the president tweeting or Ariana getting a tattoo. You're a public figure.
I could see that being hard to accept if I was a celebrity, or say if I was Ariana Grande. It's like, hey, get out of my face. Stop caring about what I got tattooed.
Well, then stop posting it on the interwebs.
Yeah, that too.
And don't follow everything else I do. I mean, you can. That's what you sign up for when you become famous to that extent.
I mean, it's not right, because the tattoo was of her hit song. It wasn't her mom or, you know, something that was personally meaningful to her. I'm sure the song has resonance to her, but it was a promotional thing she did.
No. I don't think that's true.
Really? You think that putting the name of your song on your body in a tattoo and then putting it out
isn't
promotion?
Why would she promote it?
Well, then to,
no,
open
that's
up,
not.
To open up another can of worms, did she purposely make the mistake then to then promote the song?
Oh.
I like that.
Trixie.
Griff's not even going down this road. Griffin doesn't think that was promotional. I don't know
she wants to promote every song that she records. So therefore, is she going to get every title tattooed in some
whole
other language?
Sleeve.
She'll be looking
there.
Like her ex-fiance then.
Oh, that's true.
That's been done before. All right. So on a scale of 1 to 100, where 100 is I'm super sympathetic and 0 is I have no sympathy. Maybe it should be the other way. 100 is, well, let's do it that way. 100 is I'm super sympathetic. I'm a 7 for her on this.
I think it's weird to be on any end of that spectrum. I'd go 50.
Okay.
I'm not super sympathetic, but I also don't have I have no sympathy. Seems ridiculous.
I'll go 25, I'd say.
I don't even know what we're talking about now. It's 11:53. Griff, we'll pause here. Is that correct? We got one quick break to take. Then we'll say hello to Amy, find out what's coming up next on WGN. We'll head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with the stories that matter. Bob Kessler will update us on all of that in just a minute. Meanwhile, Amy Guth has just strolled into the WGN radio studios. Hi, Amy Guth. How are you?
Hello. How's it going?
How was it out there?
Oh, it feels like springtime. I was so excited. I walked outside with my parka and almost turned around and dropped it back off at home. It was like balmy.
Literally, as I was loading up my coats, hat, scarf, stuff this morning, I thought, I don't think I need what I've been wearing lately, because I had my biggest, heaviest coat, you know, my thickest scarf, and my Russian-iest hat,
yep.
You know, with the ear flaps that you tie under your chin,
yeah.
Which I'm not sure. I think maybe that's actually a good look.
I think it's a great look.
I mean, you know, you could do that even when it's 39. It's 39 degrees downtown at the lake right now.
Which is 50 degrees warmer than it was the other day.
Well, let's see, 39, and was it 20 below? So
yeah,
really, that's
more.
Say it was 21 below. That's 60 degrees warmer in the last 2 days.
I'll take it.
And you can feel it when you walk outdoors.
Yeah, on Wednesday, I took the trash out, and in the, you know, 3 minutes to walk out the back door, down the stairs, through the alley, my contact lenses like froze to my eyeballs. I could feel them. And I was like, no, I'm not going back out. That was it.
Yeah, if you're thinking about getting a dog.
Right.
Know that there will be days like this.
Yeah.
Or that. So what are you guys doing on your show today?
Well, Super Bowl weekend upon us and all. We're going to talk with the folks from Ad Age, as we did last year, to kind of take a look at the big Super Bowl commercials. That's always such a big business story.
Did you see some of the commercials?
I haven't watched any of them yet on purpose. I try to avoid them.
You're going to consume them like they're intended to be.
That's right. I'm going to try to do that. And I think it's always interesting to look at the reactions on social media, too. For any big sporting event or awards show, something like that. But Super Bowl in particular, because you've got this back channel conversation going about the game, but then you also have all this conversation going about the ads that I think is really interesting.
I'll be interested to see what the reaction is, maybe from your guest or people on Monday. I watched a dozen of them, mm-hmm. and I'm underwhelmed this year.
That's what I've heard. A lot of people are kind of saying that. So
I think they're thoughtful and they're understated, and I think if I was watching a drama on TV, those commercials would work. But I think it's a special kind of TV program that a Super Bowl commercial has to cut through,
mm-hmm.
and the clutter of a party and the noise. My attitude was, it's not a great batch this year.
Well, I feel like I don't have a horse in the race, so I'm going to probably watch Puppy Bowl myself. So,
what else are you guys doing?
We're also going to be talking about anytime disruption hits an industry or segment of industry, I think it's really interesting. And so we're going to take a look at how the delivery business is really changing the approach to building a restaurant because of lunch. Just lunch. When you think of like a very fast, casual place, a lot of thought goes into the environment and things like that. And some people are really being quite thoughtful and using a lot of technology to make sure that what comes out of the kitchen is even more delicious 90 minutes later when it gets to your door,
yeah.
or your office. And so it's kind of this, a lot of smart people are working on how to make lunch delivery a better game because there's so much pressure to stay at your desk and order out and things like that.
Think about that. Let's listen to Amy Guth and the news. That's all coming up next on WGN.